I'd like to switch around the order tonight and fast forward to page Shin Chof Tes, and that's the beginning of Perek Mem Vav. And the Meshech Chachma notices two things. First of all, Vayisai Yisrael. Now, this is after he finds out, Yaakov, that Yosef is still alive, and he declares he's going to go down to Mitzrayim before he dies to see his son. And now, the beginning of Perek Mem Vav, he gathers together all his belongings, all his family, V'kol Asher Lo, V'yavo Be'er Shava, and he ends up in Be'er Shava. And there, V'yizbach Zvachim L'Elokei Aviv Yitzchak. And here, Rav Meir Simcha is going to go into a long discussion about why it says Elokei Aviv, and specifically what the word Zvachim means. A lot of heavy kodshim. I'm hoping that at some point we'll be able to get back to that. But I'm more interested in the next pasuk, because here Amir Simcha really has a beautiful presentation. Vayomer Elokim liYisrael b'maros halayla. So Hashem shows up to Yaakov in a vision at night, etc. So Amir Simcha says we don't find this maros halayla neither with regard to Avram, nor with regard to Yitzhak, only with regard to Yaakov. Is there something special here about this concept of B'maros HaLaila that specifically links us up to Yaakov? Hinei Tzal Avram V'Yitzhak Lo Matzanu Zeh, Rak B'Yaakov Kan, and also B'Vayetze earlier in Chumash. Also it says the famous ladder, that you know, the dream of the ladder, that Yaakov goes to sleep at night and Hashem appears to him in a dream. Hainu, the reason why this is specific to Yaakov Avinu, b'pnei shahaya muchan lotzeis l'chutz laretz lagur. At this particular moment here in Parshas Vayigash, when Yaakov is packing up all his belongings, he's leaving Eretz Canaan, he's going down to Mitzrayim, he's going to Chutz Laretz. Similar thing we had back in Parashas Vayetze, he's also going to Chutz Laretz. So Rav Meir Simcha finds the common denominator between these two occasions where Hashem shows up to Yaakov at night as Yaakov on the brink of leaving Eretz Yisrael, going to Chutz Laretz. And according to the Meshech Chachma, that's the reason Hashem shows up at night. In other words, there's some sort of transition here between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz. And that transition is marked by a dream, a vision, B'maros HaLaila, at night. L'chein ba elav hisgalus elokis b'laila, God reveals himself to Yaakov at night. Laharos, what is God trying to transmit to Yaakov? What's the secret message that is entailed or is hinted at by Laila? She'af b'Laila, Laila represents, symbolizes Cheshkas, the darkness of Golus, of exile. But nevertheless, Shoresh Shechina b'Yisrael. And I have no doubt that the Meshech Chachma here is activating or standing on the shoulders of the principle of Maisa Avos Sima L'Bonim. That what happens to the Avos, in this case Yaakov, is something that foretells what's going to happen to the descendants. That Hashem promises that even when they go into the dark exile, nevertheless, His Shechina is with them. And in order to demonstrate this, Rav Meir Simcha quotes a statement of the Gemara in Megillah. There the Gemara is talking about Golus Bavel, and the Gemara emphasizes that Golul Bavel, when the Klal Yisrael went into exile to Bavel, Shechina Imahim, the Shechina went with him. And there are many psukim that indicate Imo Anochi Mitzara, that Hashem accompanies the people of Israel in their trail, in their track to Golus. And now, Rav Meir Simcha wants to attach this idea to the specific tefillah which was enacted, established by Yaakov. And he quotes the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara tells us that there are three tefillos and there are three avos. Avraham Avinu, this is the fourth parak of Brachos, established tefillah shachris. Yitzchak Mincha v'Yaakov Arvis. Arvis obviously is the tefillah that we daven at night. And once again, the darkness of night is symbolic of Golos. And tefillas Arvis, which we daven at night, which was established by Yaakov, is parallel to the most nightly of all the avodos in the Beis HaMikdash. When I say nightly, the Mikdash is only open for business during the day. It closes at nightfall. But there are two dimensions of a karban, which are both interrelated, that go on even into the night. And that's called Haktoras Evarim, Evarim Ve'emurim, or Pedarim. What happens? You have a karban that was brought during the day. Let's say, for example, Mincha time, you have the karban Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim. The halacha allows, even though the Mikdash is closed, for the burning of the karbanos to continue, certain fats and certain parts of the animal that will continue to burn through the night. And Yaakov Avinu is going to establish now Tfilas Arvis, corresponding to this avoda of the Evarim Updarim, although their Iker avoda, in terms of Avos HaKarbon, took place during the day, nevertheless they traverse day into night. And that bridge between day and night is number one represented by the Karbon of Evarim Updarim, and number two by Tfilas Arvis. And now he quotes another statement of Chazal that seems at the face of it to contradict what we've been saying. Because elsewhere in Moed Katan, the Chazal say, Ein Ashtina Shor B'chutz Laretz. Oh. Says Rav Meir Simcha, you can't stop in the middle of a sentence. If you pause and take a breath, you're going to miss the point. Ein Ashtina Shor B'chutz Laretz, Rak L'misha Yoroa B'Eretz Yisrael. In other words, if the Shekhinah is entering into the night, or in this case, into the exile, from the day, or in its corresponding parallel from Eretz Yisrael, you've got to be anchored in Eretz Yisrael. Or, in the case of Evarim Pedarim, you're anchored in a Karban Hayom. And once you start with Yom, then you can continue into the night. And the parallel in Eretz Yisrael is that if you're in Eretz Yisrael and now you go to Golos because of your commitment to Eretz Yisrael, you can now take the Shekhinah from Eretz Yisrael into Golos. And this is how the Gemara describes Yechezkel HaNavi. Yechezkel HaNavi was one of the most profound Nevi'im of Chutz Laretz, that he prophesied even in Chutz Laretz. And there are two opinions about his prophecy in Chutz Laretz. Some say that his prophecy in Chutz Laretz was relevant to Eretz Yisrael. That's the Shita of the Kuzari of Rabbi Yudal Levi. That there's no such thing as Nevuah that's not either A, in Eretz Yisrael, received by the Navi in Eretz Yisrael, or B, about Eretz Yisrael. Or if we take the Meshech Chachma, and this you'll see in footnote number 6, that the Gemara tells us that when Yechezkel ben Buzi ends up in Eretz Kazdin, and it says Hayo Hayo Dvar Hashem El Yechezkel, etc. by Eretz Kazdin, what does it mean Hayo Hayo? So the Gemara Moed Katan establishes Shehayo Kvar, which means he was already in Eretz Yisrael. Rashi explains there in Eretz Yisrael he linked up, he tapped into the Shekhinah. And his Ruach HaKodesh was a connection to Shekhinah. Once he achieved that goal in Eretz Yisrael, then he could be Mamshich, he could continue with that Hashras HaShekhinah even in Chutz Laretz. And that's going to be the power, and that's going to be the Maisa Avos of Yaakov, to take the Shekhinah of Eretz Yisrael and bring it into Chutz Laretz. But it's all based on the fact that Yaakov was connected to the Shechina in Eretz Yisrael. And we saw something parallel in Karbonos, that there's a carbon that starts by day and it could continue into the night, but only because it's well rooted and anchored in the daytime. And therefore, says Rav Meir Simcha, L'chein sof avoda, the very last avoda of the entire day, is Aktaras Aimurim, the Evarim and the Ptarim. The Shechita and the Zrika was done by day, but the Haktara, which is the clincher, and the final termination or culmination of the avoda, is knowing Af Balayla. Bina Zeh. He gets very excited about it, Rav Meir Simcha. And I think the reason he gets excited about it is because he's going to revolutionize our idea of linking up with the Shechina in Chutz La'aretz. First, he quotes a pasuk in Tehillim: Yadcha Hashem Yom Tzoris Hagevcha Shem Elokei Yaakov. And this statement of Yaakov, you see where this pasuk, which we recite daily but we never pay attention, singles out the God of Yaakov. Why? Because Yaakov Avinu represents the Av that goes into Golos. He goes into the Cheshkas Laila, the darkness at night. That's called the Yom Tzara. But nevertheless, Yisagevcha, Hashem will protect him on that day of Tzara. Why? Because Hashem is Elokei Yaakov. And God reveals himself to Yaakov at night in order to demonstrate that even at night, God is with him. But I asked you the question before, why is Rav Meir Simcha getting so excited about this idea? Bina Zeh. That's not something that he writes on every single presentation. And I think the answer lies in the next few lines. Umi Zeh. Rav Kuperman here adds that the word Umi Zeh means that this koach, the special power of Yaakov and his children, to continue to nourish the Shechina of Eretz Yisrael even in Cheshkas Golos, is because, says Rav Meir Simcha, Yotzel Lano Mizeh Musar Haske, we have to derive from this a tremendous and powerful moral lesson, and that is that don't just think that you can snap your fingers in Golos and experience an encounter with Shechina. But rather, you have to be committed to Eretz Yisrael. Shekasher Yisrael ochazin el ha-kabbalah ni-osa. Where the Jewish people are dedicated to the transmission, the oral transmission, which is called the Kabbalah, ha-ni-osa, which is appropriate. That's something that they received and they fulfilled in Eretz Yisrael. And now they're in Chutz La'aretz. And they continue to hold on to that tradition. Ochazin el ha-kabbalah. They're still holding on. Is holchim bedarkei v'limudei avoseihem. They're still following in the path and the teachings of their forefathers. As then, because they fulfilled that critical condition, ha-yisraeli hu goy eson atik yomin, wherever the Jew finds himself on the face of the globe, he belongs to an ancient nation, an ancient people. Atik Yomin, that word Atik Yomin comes from the Zohar. It's the way that the Zohar describes Knesset Yisrael. It's the Atik Yomin. It doesn't say Yashon. It doesn't say that we're an old nation. Some people say the Jewish nation is an old nation. No, it's an ancient nation. And that's a very big difference. An old nation can be, you know, old Nebuch, he lives, he doesn't hear, he doesn't see. But an Atik Yomin, an ancient nation, means that there are ancient traditions and morality and ethical laws that are now being passed on to generations because of this ancient tradition. And who is Klal Yisrael? What is Klal Yisrael? It is a nation that should niglu elof elokim, that God revealed them, himself to them, in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, v'yos ha-migdash al-mechona, where the base ha-migdash stood, v'yos shorah ha-shechina imayim gam b'chutzatz, if they're dedicated to continue the tradition
that Ochzid El Kabbalah Niosa, the Holche Vidarche Velimudi Avoseim, then Shaz Shchina Shora Imam Gam, the Chutzot Gam, the Laila, even at night. Havel, but here I can imagine Rabbi Simcha picking up his forefinger and warning us, waving his forefinger.
If they completely ignore and cut themselves off from the tradition, from the covenant of their forefathers, then they're not in Eretz Yisrael. Hello, ein shechina shor b'chutz l'aretz. We go back to the beginning, the reisha of that statement of the Gemara by Katan, that ein hashchina shor b'chutz l'aretz. And the Gemara says there's only going to be shechina for someone in chutz l'aretz if he's roeh be Eretz Yisrael, meaning if he's still committed and dedicated to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, if he has cut himself off from the bris of Avoseihem, is the stalka shechina mehem, the shechina will no longer go with them. Now, obviously, we'd have to ask the mechaber here, what does he mean, nistalka shechina mehem? I mean, who's the mehem? Is it the entire? How many Jews have forsaken the bris, the covenant? I know a Jew who wrote a book called Optional Voluntary Covenant. Yeah, he doesn't belong to the Orthodox tradition, but he tries to claim that it's up to us to decide whether we want to be committed to the bris. Chas v'shalom. I mean, that's mamish almost, it borders on kfirah. It's one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim is that the Kabbalah Satorah and the bris that we entered into is generates a chiyuv, is mechayev all generations of Jews. It's not a question of voluntary. So if a Jew says, I'm finished with this bris, I want to start a new people, a new nation. And now we've gotten to the point, as you know, that the reform, I'm not saying all of them, but it seems like a loud minority of them, if not the majority of them, are actually in favor of intermarriage. It's just beyond belief. I mean, when I was a kid, reform meant a lot of different things, but that was the red line. Again, I'm not saying that reform in my youth wouldn't accept a Jew who was intermarried. That I don't mean. He would be accepted in a reform synagogue. But to say that that's l'chatchila, what the real option should be, that we should spread the wealth and basically destroy ourselves as a nation, that's something new. So when Rav Meir Simcha speaks about Zman Sheshachachu Bris Avoseihem, it's almost like he's foretelling 110 years ago. You know, he's foretelling what's happening today in many circles. And then it's the Stalka Shechina Imahem. Then we don't have any chance to continue and transmit that same Shechina that we had in Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz. And worse than that, he says, "Unesudim lebishisa vilavos." Here, I think he's predicting the Holocaust, because he says that we're going to be just devoured by the nations. Ki eino choshev atzmo legoyatik shekvar ra'a. He has no connection to the ancient nation that saw the Shechina back in Eretz Yisrael. V'hoya dvar Hashem elav and received the word of Hashem. Ubaze Yuvan, now we can understand a pasuk in Yirmiyah, which is based on a parasha in Malachim. Ki al api v'al chamasi hoysali ha'ir azos l'min ha'yom asher banu osa v'yad ha'yom azeh l'asira v'al ponai. Now this pasuk, which mentions a city, is an allusion to Givon. And Rabbi Simcha knows this from a parsha, perek, in Malachim. And this has to do with Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech, to some extent, is a
well, externally, it's not really so, but there's a parallel to Yaakov. Just like Yaakov gets the Maris HaLaila, so in a place called Givon, Hashem appears to Shlomo in a Chalom Laila. Now here, Rabbi Simcha goes off a little bit on a tangent into the laws of Kodshim. And he says that Givon has the status of a Mishkan, which is called a Bamas Tzibur. It doesn't have the status of the Beis HaMikdash. Kishenivda Beis HaMikdash, and here you want to flip this to the other side of your page, and his Palel, there's an entire chapter which is dedicated to the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash, that's Melach Mal Perkhes, and there, Shlomo beseeches God to reveal his Shekhinah on the Beis HaMikdash. And it says there, Vayera Hashem El Shlomo Balayla. So that despite the fact that Shlomo was beseeching God, he was supplicating that God should appear by day, the pasuk testifies that Hashem appeared to Shlomo at night. Now that can't be a good thing, because we're now on the day of the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash. We're now in a position, in a location where there's the greatest and most intense Gilui Shekhinah. And yet, Hashem appears to Shlomo Balayla? I mean, that makes sense in the case of Yaakov Avinu, because Yaakov Avinu is about to exit Eretz Yisrael and go into Mitzrayim, or wherever he's going in each case into Golos. But Shlomo, why wasn't he Zocha to Amara Yom? And Rabbi Simcha, to answer this question, quotes a very famous Gemara about the establishment of Rome. The Gemara says that Rome was born, the archenemy of the Jewish nation, was born on the very day that Shlomo HaMelech married Bas Paro. V'lo zochel laharos elav Hashem bayom, God already concealed his Shekhinah on that great, great day. And why? Ki gazar al Yisrael sheyiglu, because at that moment God decreed that Klal Yisrael would go into Golos. And why? Because Shlomo HaMelech married the daughter of Paro. Now you and I might say, what's the great significance of that event? Okay, he should have married her, that I understand. Chazal say that that was the beginning of the end, because what Bas Paro did was she brought into Klal Yisrael, into the society of the Jewish nation, Avodah Zorah. And she would gather together thousands of her followers to teach the Jewish people about Avodah Zorah. And that's what, of course, one of the three cardinal sins. So that began the very day that Shlomo HaMelech married Bas Paro. And as a result, Hashem reveals himself to Shlomo, Bimaros Laila, B'chalom Laila. Lachin hayu mizgala b'lahem b'laila. Lahoros, God wanted to transmit a message, a symbolic message, that even though today is the day in which the decree, the divine decree of Golos is signed and sealed, nevertheless Hashem says, I will show up at Laila. So the same message of faith and hope that we saw in Yaakov Avinu, when Yaakov is about to leave Eretz Yisrael and enter into Golos, Hashem says, you know what? I'm going to show up, I'm going to reveal myself to you, B'maras Laila, despite the fact that you're going into Cheshkas HaGolos, I will be with you. And the same subliminal message was transmitted at the time that Shlomo HaMelech brought about the Golos. And that's what happens in a place called Givon, because the Pasuk testifies in Malachim that B'Givon Nir Hashem El Shlomo B'Chalom Laila. That in a place called Givon, Hashem appears to Shlomo at night to tell him, you know what? There's going to be a Golos, but I will be with you and reveal myself to you even at night. Kishenivden, Beis HaMikdash, Vayera Hashem El Shlomo Shenis Kashenireis Elov B'Givon. Once again, the pasuk indicates that the same quality of his Galus Hashem that we saw in Givon manifested itself at the time of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Lo b'mayla gvoyos, not on a higher level of a Mara Yom, but rather Mara Laila. So the good news is that there's a message of faith and optimism. The bad news is that there was no, we didn't merit that great, intense, perfect kind of gilui on the Maila Gvoa, but rather it was a Chalom Laila. So if we want to summarize this whole piece, Rabbi Simcha is saying something amazing here. There's a parallel here, a three-way parallel between Yaakov establishing Tfilas Arvis, between Yaakov experiencing a revelation of God at night, and between Shlomo in Givon. In all three cases, we're talking about a symbolic message of Golus, and Hashem is giving us faith and optimism that even in Golus, He will still be with us, the Shechinah is with us, He will reveal Himself even in Golus. But the great Musar, the great ethical message, which Rabbi Simcha calls Bina Zeh, meaning we should study it, is that our ability, our merit to experience this Gilui Shechinah in Golus is conditional on the fact that we connect to the original Gilui Shechinah in Eretz Yisrael. We're taking the Gilui Shechinah of Eretz Yisrael and we're expanding it into Golus.
The Golus that Hashem decreed because of Shlomo, which that was the Babylonian, the first exile, not the second.
Correct. That was the first one, after Rome. Destruction.
You said Rome, so I thought.
Right, but the second base of English would be destroyed as a result of Shlomo. Now, why the first base of English is not destroyed as a result of Shlomo's sin, I don't know. For that, we'd have to go through the Sugya.
Okay.
What I'd like to do now is rewind, and now let's go back to the beginning of Parshas Vayigash. So you should have a page which doesn't have a number on it, but it would be the number Shin Chaf Aleph if there were a number on it. So let's open up the Chumash, which is always a good idea when you're learning Meshech Chachma. And the Torah tells us that Yehuda steps forward to encounter Yosef, and he says to him that our master, meaning you, Yosef, had asked us, do we have a brother? Our response was that Yesh lanu av zaken v'yelad zkunim katan, we have both Yaakov, our elderly father, and Binyamin, our youngest brother. We had another brother, the Achiv Meis. Is that true?
No. Well, Yehuda knows it's not true.
So if Yehuda knows it's not true, is there a sheker here? Was Yehuda allowed to lie? Keep in mind that Rabbi Simcha thinks in a halachic vein. And Yehuda here is basically representing all the brothers, saying that they had a brother who died.
But it says Enena. Doesn't it say Enena? Does it say Meis or say Enena?
And I'm looking at the pasuk. It's kedai to have a chumash if you're learning Rabbi Simcha. The Achiv Meis.
Are you sure?
Okay, if you don't believe me, Bari, if you want to come and join us, please open up a chumash. I can't tell you that I'm inventing psukim.
I believe you.
I believe. Who was it that said I believe?
I could. I thought it said Nana, but I could be wrong.
Now, many of the commentaries say that Yehuda at that moment was sort of overwhelmed. He lost it. He wasn't thinking clearly. He was standing in front of the great viceroy of Egypt and he blurted out something that wasn't true. Rabbi Simcha says that what they said was true from their perspective. And that's based on a sugya, if I'm not mistaken, in Masechta Yevamos. If not, I'll correct myself as I go along. But let's not slow down here, because it doesn't matter what Masechta is, just to understand the halachic principle. The halachic principle is that if two witnesses testify that Leah's husband Reuven died, and two other witnesses contradict them. We're not talking about Azama here, so don't get confused. And they say, no, Reuven is still alive. Then halacha is that if she knows that the two witnesses who testify that her husband died are telling the truth, we'll have to see how she knows that. That's the punchline of this discussion. So she can marry someone else. So the Gemara immediately asks the following question. Trey, be asham koi. The halacha is that if you eat a piece of meat and you don't know whether it's kosher or not, that's the famous case of Safek Shuma and Safek Chelev. Chelev and Shuma almost look identical. It depends where you took it in the body. So then you're going to have to bring what's called a Karban Asham. A Karban Asham, as opposed to a Chatas, is a Karban Abal HaSafek. Which means if you don't know, and how could you know if there are two witnesses against two witnesses, that if you went ahead and violated a Safek Isur, and in this case it's a Chiyuv Misa, she went ahead and got married based on two Eidim, but those two Eidim were contradicted. So the Gemara argues she should have to bring a Karban Asham, which again is like a Chatos, but it's Baal HaSafek. So the Gemara answers, no, she's allowed to get married. Why? And here are the key words. Be'omeres barili. She says, I know he's dead. So Rashi, on the sugya, though I said it was in Yevamos, I see it's in Ksubas, Rashi says, how does she know that her husband is dead? So if you take a look for a moment at the fourth line in this paragraph, it says, She'ilu hoya kayam hoya ba. How does she know that he's dead, and therefore she's allowed to get married, she doesn't have to bring a Karban Asham? It's because if he were alive, he certainly would have shown up. Then the Meshech Chochma ends with three words. He says, V'ayin Ran Shom. So before we get to the Ran, let's just understand Rashi. Rashi is saying that Bari, which means I'm definite, I'm certain about the fact that he died, is based on the fact that Ilu, if he would have been alive, Hayakayim, Hayaba, the absence of my husband, that he didn't show up, proves to me, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that he is dead. If he were alive, he would definitely show up. Now again, before we see the Ran and get into the, you know, the issues here about this Rashi, Rabbi Simcha builds the following case on Rashi. And that's not bad. You know, if you have a case built on Rashi, that's good, even though there are other Rishonim who disagree with Rashi. And that is, the Lefiya di Asam, Hechaya Makusha Yosef Li'aviv, they knew the quality of the relationship, the love and the dedication of Yosef to his father, is betach, for sure, Ilu Hoya B'chaim, if he were alive, he would send an email, or a WhatsApp, or what do they have, Facebook, I don't know, whatever there is. Hoya Modia Li'aviv B'michtav B'komo. He would, well, B'michtav Kama B'komo. I would have written it a little bit different. Hoya Modia Li'aviv B'komo B'michtav. That's how I would have written it. But anyway, he says, Hoya Modia Li'aviv B'michtav. He would have notified it to his father, B'komo, where he is. Now, I don't understand. Maybe he's in jail. He's an Evet. Does he have access to post? You know, can he find the stamp? I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of different issues here. But Rabbi Simcha says, Zem Mikri Bari. This means that you are certain. So it wasn't that the brothers were just lying and they were saying, you know what? Yosef is dead. They had ample proof, which is halachically binding and reliable, based on this Rashi Ksubis.
Isn't the combination of Edom with them?
Well, no, the Edom leave us nowhere because the Edom is a tray.
I thought the Edom give it some. The fact that you're two Edom on one side at least gives you some. some strength.
Again, but the issue
say that in any
here,
case
the trey brings you to a case of an asham
tolui.
Why do you remove the asham tolui? The answer is because of barili. Do you follow? So even with the two pairs of eidim, what you're left with is a suffix. At this point, she has to decide.
When any aguna say that, in other words, wouldn't that solve all aguna cases? That if my husband would have come to me otherwise.
I don't know. For that, I have to learn.
We don't know where the guy is.
You have to learn the six parak of
Yevamos.
That's Taka Yevamos. Again, Rabosai. Why do I learn this piece with you? Because I see over and over again how Rabbi Simcha invokes halachic principles in order to understand Pshat and Apostle. Others would say that they lied and they were allowed to lie. Others would say they were overwhelmed and they, inadvertently they lied, whatever it is. Rabbi Simcha says that's not a lie. Why? Because that's called barili. Why did Yosef send a letter to notify? If you take a look at Rav Kuperman in number 2, he says, "I ha-hoda," the absence of the notification of Yosef, "mahava hochacha," it represents a proof, "maspekes," that's sufficient, "lemosa," that he actually died. And therefore they could claim that he died. Now he has a Ramban here that says the following: Vayaker Yosef es hachalomos asher cholam lahem. So the Ramban says ki iho da asoli aviv. Okay. So Rav Kuppin points out that this Meshech Chochma is against the Ramban. The Ramban says that on second thought, maybe it's not against it's not against the Ramban. The Ramban is asking a slightly different question. The Ramban is addressing the question, well, why Taka didn't Yosef notify his father? I don't think that contradicts the premise here of Rabbi Simcha, that the brothers, they didn't have any explanation as to why Yosef did not notify his father other than the fact that he was dead. Now this whole sugya ksubis is summarized here in footnote number 3, Tanur Rabbanan, Shnaim omrim meis, su shnaim omrim lo meis, harezu lo tinase. Niseis, v'yakach bo edim lo teitse.
Do you know what daf that is in Kusubos?
Chaf beis. You'll take a look in Rabeir Simcha. I photocopied it for you. You don't have it?
No. But also, I'm learning Kusubos and Chaf beis. I probably got through about 6 months ago. And I don't remember it, so.
Okay. But Murray, what I want you to do is take out a pen and look at line number 5 and underline.
No, I don't have that page. I don't have the page. I'm saying.
How did that happen? I thought I made 3 copies. Is it possible that somebody stole your copy?
Turn the page over. No, the other page does not have.
I'm sorry. My mistake. It's here on the desk.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. There are 2 different pages there. So if you could share it with David, I mean, Aaron has his own copy. So he says here, Shnaim Omer Meis, Shnaim Omer Lo Meis, Harei Zol Tinase. This says, Yakak Bo Edim, Lo Teitse. Oh, this is a complicated sugya because it wasn't exactly trade. She got married
right after the
based
first.
On the first pair of Edim, and then the second pair of Edim.
And it sounds like you need the first set
right.
For this.
But again, yeah. Aaron, you're going to have to understand this. If you I can't bludgeon you to understand this. The issue here is barili, in other words, to remove the suffix in a case of trey, and therefore exempt her from a karban. The Gemara requires bari, that she has to know for sure that he's dead.
Do you need the trey as well, or no?
Say it again?
Do you need the trey?
No, I'm saying, after you get to trey, at this point, you're chayav a karban asham tolu. So the Gemara asks, how do we say lo teitze in this case? Since at this point, from now and on, when the second pair of Edom come in, it's an Ashem Toli situation. And the Gemara says, there's no Ashem Toli. Why is there no Ashem Toli, says the Gemara? Because it's Omeris Barili. Because she herself is not Chayav a Karban in a case of Suffolk when she's not in a Suffolk situation. So the Gemara says, what do you mean she's not in a Suffolk situation? How does she know her husband died? So Rashi says she knows her husband died because otherwise he would have notified her. That's the best I can do. Now, what is going on in the Ran over here? If you take a look at number 4, he says, Venerish's Kiko Larashi Lomer came to Ilubo Meris Bari Lisha Mace Tapukle Shaisha Shaamra Mace Baila Nemenis Vadai Kavan Shaena Yodas Hadom Vibiru Vashon Toli Kaimel Vadai Hachi Prishma Meris Bari Li Sheri Isiv Shemes. All right, this is really very complicated. The Ran disagrees with Rashi. And he claims that Omeris Barili doesn't mean that, why didn't he come back, but rather she actually saw his dead body.
Right.
So that,
so right. Again, it doesn't sound like you can just...
the Meshachov was trying to explain it.
I mean, in the case of Yosef, the fact that he really was alive proves that Barili doesn't always, you know, have validity, because in this case, Yosef really was alive, so that,
yeah, but, in that but case, yeah,
he could be alive.
Truth is relative. Do you hear this, Murray?
Yes.
If a person believes that so and so is beautiful, she is beautiful, even if everyone else in the world says she's ugly.
Okay.
Truth is relative. If they know that he's dead, it doesn't matter one iota whether he's alive or dead. They know he's dead. Do you understand? Because truth is relative.
Okay.
Let's go on to Perek Mem He. Now we're going to skip all the way to Perek Mem He. And here, the Torah says the following: "V'lo yachol Yosef lisapik l'chol anisovim." Now, what does that sound like to you when he says that Yosef was not able to? I don't know how you translate lisapik into English, to overcome, to withhold, to remain, you know, steadfast in his face. What does that imply when it says lo hoya?
And it was very emotional.
Yeah.
He couldn't.
But what would have been in a perfect ideal? Whenever I say to you, "Hu lo yachol," what does that imply?
They wanted to.
Exactly.
They wanted to.
And that's what Rabbi Simcha wants to understand. Why is he tormenting the brothers? All the brothers are there. Even Binyamin has come at this point. And yet the pasuk says, "V'lo yachol Yosef l'sapik ritzon alone," which implies ki ratzal l'sapik. He himself, Yosef, wanted to be misapik. He wanted to withhold and not reveal himself. And here, at this point, Rabbi Simcha invokes the Ramban. Do you remember that the Ramban had said that the reason why Yosef didn't notify his father is because he was waiting to see that the dreams should be fulfilled, and his father would come down to Mitzrayim because of that dream of Hashemesh Vayoreach HaKochavim Korvish Tachvim Li. And Hashemesh here is an allusion to Yaakov Avinu. But you know what? Even Rabbi Simcha, who I call the Ish Halach, if anyone who's read that book, even he gets a little emotional at some point. And he wants to know, okay, fine. Yosef has an agenda and he's not going to budge. He's going to have to bring Yaakov down to Mitzrayim. But in Yiddish we say, for desvegen, I mean, after all is said and done,
can't hold out.
How is he tormenting his brothers? So he says the following, and maybe you could enlighten me on this, because it's a very complicated statement. He writes, "V'lo hayelo l'rachim aleihem." You understand? There's an implicit question over here. As if Rabbi Simcha is not happy, or not totally satisfied with his original position, as to why Yosef is continuing in this, you know, again, lo yachol l'sapi, but we'll have to see why he wasn't able to, but he wanted to be misapik and continue in this, I don't know what word to use, this terrible tirade against the brothers. But now Rabbi Simcha is not so satisfied with that. And he tries to find further justification for this torment that Yosef is beating up his brothers. And he adds here five words, which I don't understand. Kasher, which means just like. Lo shamu, they didn't hear him. No. Who's the they?
The brothers.
The brothers. Bishanu aleihem, which is a pasuk in Chumash. In other words, when he was about to be thrown into the pit, and they stripped him of his sonus pasity, he was begging them for mercy. But Rabosai, why am I so perturbed by this line in Rever Simcha? One word.
The comma.
The comma, exactly. This is the comma. I don't understand this Rever Simcha. I would say the following, that Rabbi Simcha is not trying to justify. The justification here is the dream. But how is Yosef able to live with that? I think he's asking more of an emotional question. On a halakhic basis, I don't know why he has to ask this question. He's already given us an ample explanation. Yosef has to fulfill the dreams. And that's the underlying thesis of all these many, many years in which Yosef doesn't notify his father. Secondly, if he's giving a halakhic answer, this is the comma, to say that Yosef is not going to have compassion over his brothers, to continue in his tirade to torment them because they didn't have compassion for him. That's exactly what the comma is all about.
But isn't the whole process of bringing Binyamin and seeing if they're going to protect him, and there's, right. Isn't that a process of tshuva that Yosef is putting them?
Right, Rav Soloveitchik talks about this in great length. I heard it from him three times, probably. You know, the tshuva is called tshuva shlema
or tshuva ramishkel.
No, I don't know about tshuva ramishkel, but tshuva shlema. The Rabbi says ezu tshuva shlema. He finds himself in the same situation with the same kochos.
But it's Yosef who is court. Choreographing, who is creating,
engineering.
He's not leading that to Hashem. In other words, he's setting up a scenario that they're going to do tshuva. Along those same lines, it sounds like these five words is that he also is going through a process that they're feeling some pain as well. That's necessary in the tshuva, some tzar. That's not nekama.
It could be that. That's what Rabbi Simcha means.
The tshuva process.
I think it's a stretch of the words.
Is there a problem in saying that Yosef, being human, gave in and had a little nekama? I mean, do we not want to believe that Yosef was capable of that?
I say on an emotional level, I'm with you 100%. But if Rabbi Simcha is putting on his halachic thinking cap, it's impossible to say that you'll torment someone and have no compassion just because he had no compassion on you. That is the comma, to the best of my knowledge.
Yes, it is.
So I don't think Rabbi Simcha here is on a halachic level. I think he's trying to say, how is Yosef able to live with himself as a human being and continue in this ferocious attack against his brother?
He's saying maybe this was a sin. Maybe he shouldn't have done it. But everyone sins.
Well, no. Again, I think we've passed the level of sin. I tell you why. Because if Yosef had this nevuah, then he has to abide by the nevuah. But on an emotional level, I think maybe Rabbi Simcha is asking more of a psychological question. How could Yosef live with himself? Rabbi Aaron thinks that maybe what the Meshachach was telling us is that, you know, Yosef is trying to orchestrate a situation where they'll be in this, but
There's another problem with saying this in the Kama, because Binyamin is there now. And Binyamin was not part of the group that tormented him, and yet he's now tormenting Binyamin along with us, the brothers, so it can't be pure
that's,
in the Kama.
That's a brilliant question. That's an amazing question, Murray.
Thank you.
How do we justify this statement? I just want to show you, Murray, that I'm not always against you.
Right.
1 in 100, you hit the home run. And here you hit the home run. How could Rabbi Simcha say that Yosef is going to torment his brothers just like they tormented him when we're dealing with Binyamin as well? Let's just see inside. Just 1 second. Maybe I jumped the gun here. Yosef is definitely Binyamin is definitely with us, right?
Binyamin is there. That's the whole thing. Yehuda's standing there and arguing for saying that Binyamin can't stay here. I'm going to stay in his place. He's been brought down to Mitzrayim. He's standing
right. There. But where is Binyamin actually standing there, or he's been locked up? Well, what exactly? I just don't remember the psukim here.
He's not locked up, he just came down.
Vayomer Yosef ma.
If you look at the number two here, Meshachum gives a note number two.
All right, just give me a second, Murray. I'll get back to number two. I just wanted one thing I wanted to clear my head here. I don't want to get off on a tangent here. Lekachtem gam ezeh, if you'll take him away, kibo yel avdecha vi, and Ari Nenu is then...
Right, Yehuda's stand is saying, take me instead of Binyamin. I can't go back home without Binyamin. I mean, standing there, but Yamin has been brought down. That was Yehuda that he fought with his father. That let me take him. I'll
so that's Murray's question. Yeah. So what did you find in footnote number two?
At the end, because we have to put footnote number two at the end of that pasuk he felt he had permission to continue the torment until they would bring his father to Mitzrayim, even though they were being,
Right, he's not bothered by the Nakama question.
Right, and he puts this to specifically on that thing that he says, at the end of that, so...
So now, let's just finish up this paragraph. Rabbi Simcha wants to know, so why takalo Yosef lisape? In other words, Yosef is absolutely comfortable emotionally and certainly halachically, based on the nevuah, in continuing his agenda against the brothers. Ach! So what does it mean in the pasuk? Lo yochol Yosef lisape? And here, I think Rabbi Simcha comes up with a very original idea. It's up to you whether you like the idea or not. But you have to admit that it's a pretty original idea. And he says that lo haya ne'os lifnei ha'noshim anitzavim. Those the people around him are aware of the fact that Yosef is really on a tirade against his brothers. Well, they don't know it's his brothers, but I mean against these people, right? They were commissioned to hide the Amtachas and the Gvir in the first round, the second round, and he took away Shimon and this, that, and the other thing. And it was all based on some sort of accusation that the brothers were spies. Shlo Yadu Kalama Ora, they had no idea that Yosef was sold as a slave by his brothers. Vayendire, anybody know what that which concept is implicit here in Rabbi Yosef? He doesn't say it out loud. For Hayanira, it appears, what's that called?
What?
Kiddush Hashem, or Chil Hashem.
Okay.
For Hayanira, it appears to the onlooker, Ke'achzar, that this man Yosef is cruel.
Because they know the whole thing was a fake. They know that he asked him to.
Right.
So
how long can he continue, this great viceroy who's supposed to be a moral, ethical person, he's a godly, divine person, and yet he's tormenting these people, these innocent people. Kilev Belial Bilti Choded. He's like an evil heart without any compassion. Is therefore lo hayochol isapik b'sibas kol hanitzavim olav. And if you take a look at the pasuk, he's really shedding a new light on the text of the pasuk. Lo yochol isapik lechol hanitzavim. He's saying because of the nitzavim. Now we all understand that he's sort of embarrassed that he's going to have to reveal that these are his brothers, blah, 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 and he doesn't want to do that publicly. He's saying something else, that the public nature of this lo yochol isapik is an explanation why Yosef couldn't maintain and continue in this program against the brothers. Very original thinking. I don't know, maybe I went a little far when I said Chil Hashem. I don't know. He was known to the Egyptians as an Ivri. He was also known to the Egyptians as Isha Sharuach Elokim Bo. I mean, that already came from the mouth of Paro himself. Would it be fair to say that the Kohen Tarmei Simcha is an issue of Chil Hashem? I don't know, maybe. Perhaps one could argue that. But in any event, it's really fascinating because when we think about this Ramban and the Chalomos and the Kiyum of the Chalomos, it's a very powerful and fundamental idea, and all that goes down the wayside. And in fact, if you take a look in footnote number 3, he says, Ubazed Nechshal. Yosef was unsuccessful. He's a failure in Bitzua Chalom Hasheni. Because Lo Niskayim Bimlo Bi'ais Uba'ona Achas. Meaning, Yaakov was meant to come down with the brothers and bow down together with them, the Ace of Ma'ona Achas. And instead, what's going to happen is that many, many years later, Yaakov is going to sort of bow to Yosef on his deathbed or whatever it might be. But that's not really the Kiyum Bibaloa, the really strict, literal fulfillment of the Nevuah in the Chalom, Ubezen Nichshal. That's Rav Kuperman uses that term, Nichshal. But again, why? It was a deliberate decision that sometimes you're in a tug of war, you have a conflict between two major ideals, and you have to decide which is going to lose out to which, and there's going to be some sort of a loss and some sort of defeat. But better to be defeated in the Kiyum HaChalomos than to be defeated in being portrayed and understood by the spectators of Chol HaNisavim Olam as if he was an ish lev belial she'eino chone, that has no compassion at all.
What would have been the plan otherwise? In other words,
to have the brother father.
How should it have played out?
If there was no issue of what I call chil hashem, I'll use that just as a catchphrase. Then what's going to happen is, he's going to continue to torment them, he's going to take Binyamin away, and he's going to say, well, I'm not going to give you back Binyamin until Yaakov comes down. Okay, how many minutes do we have left? We have about 4 minutes left. Let's see. The next piece is also very fertile, very creative. He gives, I think, 3 different, or maybe 4 different answers to the same question. So to appreciate this piece, let's open up to Pasuk Yud Beis in the same chapter that we're looking at. And he says the following. Now Yosef is sending a message to his father to encourage his father to come down and resettle in Mitzrayim. And he says to him, V'hine einechem ro'os ve'einei achi binyamin ki pi ha'medaber aleichem. Rashi has a whole long thing here about the fact that he spoke Lashon Kodesh. Says Rabbi Simcha Pirush, what does it mean? Kipi Amidab Aleichem. Shirit Sono Hoyolis Apek Ulahavi Biofanim Ha'ela Es Yos Es Yaakov. In other words, Yosef had a major challenge here. How is he going to entice his father, get his father to agree to come down to Mitzrayim? Yaakov would not want to leave Eretz Yisrael, especially if you consider that he had Ruach HaKodesh in Eretz Yisrael. Derakolzman shenemad Yosef, he says, as long as Yaakov was convinced that Yosef is gone, he lost the connection to Shechina and to Ruach HaKodesh, because he was in a state of depression. But once Yaakov found out that Yosef was alive, immediately he had Ruach HaKodesh. And therefore he's not going to want to come down to Mitzrayim and forfeit Ruach HaKodesh. So what was Yosef's plan? What was his agenda? What was his argument? He said, Kipi hamidaber. What does it say? Kipi hamidaber aleichem. And he says the following. The Gemara tells us in Titus, based on a pasuk in Yechezkel Nahar Kvar, Asher hoye mikvar. And that's why I wanted to switch around the order here in Rabbi Simcha. That once there's a Shechina in Eretz Yisrael, then the Shechina will not depart in Chutz Lorenz. And that's what Yosef was conveying to his father, Kipi Amidaber, meaning that the peh here is the peh of Ruach HaKodesh, meaning when you speak words of Ruach HaKodesh, that means that the Shechina of Eretz Yisrael continues to manifest itself with you in Chutz Lorenz. And Yaakov and Yosef is telling his father that, guess what? My Ruach HaKodesh that I had in Eretz Yisrael has not left me. It still accompanies me. And that's what Yaakov, and that's what Yosef means when he says, Ki Pi Hamidaber. Pi Hamidaber means Hamidaber Berlashon Ruach HaKodesh. So don't worry, Father, you'll be able to continue with your Ruach HaKodesh even in Chutzlarts. That's the first round. Now, Rabbi Simcha scraps that, and he starts from the beginning. Oh, well, maybe Yosef is conveying an entirely different message. Maybe you, Yaakov, maybe Dad, you think that I need you down here in Mitzrayim. It's for my benefit. Why? Because I'm a lowly slave. I'm a Hebrew, a Hebrite. You know, nobody respects me. I'm an Evan. I was taken out of the dungeon. You know, the prison. And therefore, maybe you think, Yaakov, that the reason I'm summoning you down to Mitzrayim is for my benefit, meaning for Yosef's benefit. For Lachem Lichvod Lo, it would be a covet to him if Yaakov comes down to Mitzrayim, because Yaakov is called Messiah Elokim. And really, in truth, when Yaakov is being summoned or invited by his son, it's not L'tovas Yaakov. L'chein, therefore, Omar. He wants to assuage Yaakov's fears after he presents all the other details about what they're going to do when they get down to Mitzrayim, etc., etc., and how Yaakov and Yosef is going to be mefardes them. Omar, shechosh rach L'tovasam. That what motivates me for you, Yaakov, to come down to Mitzrayim is for your benefit, not for my benefit. How do we see this in the pasuk? And the emphasis here is on the word aleichem. The last word of this pasuk, ki pi amedaber, is the word aleichem. Aleichem always means l'tovaschem, like we saw lech lecha l'tovascha, lech aleichem l'tovaschem l'tovaschem. Why? Because my honor here in Mitzrayim, says Yosef, is on the greatest level. You can't get any higher than me. I'm the number two man here in Mitzrayim. So I have the tachlis of all the covet I need. And therefore, any time that I ask you to come down to Mitzrayim, it's aleichem, it's l'tovaschem. Then Rabbi Simcha offers a third pshat. Shelo yomar Yaakov, she'yeh be'eretz Kanaan v'chalkalenu v'shiloach lo. Maybe Yaakov could remain in Eretz Mitzrayim and get a care package that would be brought by Shliach on a regular basis. Why not send the goods? Therefore, Yosef had to convince his father that it was impossible. This was not even a possibility. Why? Because lo yitochet sheyishlach ish nochri li'eretz avosav bazon u'michya. If we were to send export the goods of Mitzrayim to someone who's a Nochri, you know, someone who is not a local Egyptian, Yomru, the Egyptians will say, Ki sofel lahotzi chelev haaretz, that Yosef is removing the best of the best, and he's sending it to his father Jacob, because he himself, Yosef, is a Nochri. He is alien. He's a fifth column. He's not really a true blue, loyal, patriotic Egyptian. And Yosef says to his father, Ki pi amedaber, I am a Mitzri l'chol halichos v'lshono. I speak their language. And therefore, Yomru, sheshachach eretz molanato v'lo yishchadu bazeh. And if you'll claim, Yaakov, that nobody will suspect you if you send the food, because they know that you're a real true blue Egyptian, it means that I speak Hebrew, and therefore Ivri Anochi B'chol Tovar, and they see me as a fifth column, as a foreigner. There's a lot to develop in this third one. I remember Rav Salvation used to talk about Charles de Gaulle. When Rothschild died, he left a last will and testament that his bones be taken from France to the land of Israel. Mm-hmm. And de Gaulle apparently made a comment, I thought he was a true blue Frenchman. Right. But where was his nationalism that he wants to be? So then the Rav goes into this whole existential connection that a Jew has with Eretz Yisrael. I'm not going into that. But here also, the question is, Are they going to suspect Yosef of being an Ivri? He's like a fifth column, and he's going to exploit the land of Egypt and send and export all the good chelev, the best of the best, to Chutzlar. And the truth is, no matter how great you are in a country, and no matter how much you contribute, at the end of the day, you're still a Jew.
Right, yeah.
And they'll always find.
Say, in America, the same thing.
Yeah.
No matter how much good you do for America and all that, in the end, they're always going to say, "Oh, he's dual loyalty," and
right, dual loyalty,
and then he's not really a true American.
Exactly. Okay, Rabbi Moshe, we'll stop here. I'm going to give another shiur on the rest of the, well, not all of the Meshchach one Vayigash, but that's in the morning shiur, so you don't. Okay then.